Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Scott Gould, who is an author, an advisor, and he's actually my friend from a long time ago. So, for the first time, I believe, Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, thank you, Adrian. In fact, I remember when you started the podcast many a year ago, so I'm glad to grace it at last.
Ahaha, brilliant. So, Scott, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and also about the work that you do?
Certainly. I'm the author of The Shape of Engagement, which is a book on engagement. No surprises there. It's also something that I do. Yeah, there we go. Spoiler alert. I'm also a management advisor, consultant. I work with companies on their customer engagement particularly. Mm-hmm. And I speak at a fair number of conferences, of which sometimes you and I are at the same one. So that's always that's always a particular joy, and we enjoy a nice scotch while we're at it.
Aha, perfect.
Previously, before I did this, I actually have a bit of an interesting story because I was a church minister. I also was a creative director. I produced a conference that was kind of quite popular in its time. And I also was a television producer, of all things. So I've done a range of different bits and bobs. So generally, kind of the digital world is something that I'm very conversant with because I've worked quite deeply in it, I suppose. So a lot of the people that you have on here that you interview, I kind of would be of the same ilk, I suppose.
Perfect. So as you kind of mentioned there, you recently published a new book called The Shape of Engagement. And the subtitle is The Art of Building Enduring Connections with Your Customers, Employees, and Communities. So can you tell us a little bit about the book, who's it for, and how it came about? I mean, because actually the thing that I really like about it is this idea that you've not tacked on, but it's like engagement, and you've actually almost like made it visual, because you talk about the shapes of it. But before we get into them, tell me about the book and who's it aimed at and how it came about.
Yeah, well, the problem that I was discovering, mm-hmm. Was that people who worked in engagement, and often people whose titles was head of engagement for X or Y or Z, whether it was for students at a university or customers at a particular brand or employees, inside a startup, mm-hmm. they were doing engagement, but they were doing it tactically. And so sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And when it didn't work, they would scratch their heads and not be sure why a tactic that used to work now wasn't working. Right. And what was really lacking was a strategic map for how one goes about increasing engagement in a sustainable, long-term manner. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the literature that was out there. There wasn't, such a framework described. And it so happened that I'd spent the last 9 years or so thinking an awful lot about this, but I hadn't always used the word engagement to describe it. I was struggling to really find the language, but there was something that I was looking at that was about the way that we build relationships with each other, mm-hmm. but also the way that we build relationships with brands or products or even ideas. Mm-hmm. So I over the last couple of years have been shaping up those frameworks that I've been working up, and slowly I began to see that there was a kind of collection of shapes here that interlocked with each other, but each one had a distinct nuance. And I decided, okay, well, let's get this into an ebook. And that was last summer. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was a mutual acquaintance of yours and mine, Joe Pine, who is the author of kind of the seminal book on customer experience, really, called The Experience Economy, which was published in 1999, so a very far-sighted book.
Yes.
He's a friend and I guess somewhat of a mentor to me, and we were having a Skype call, and he said, I saw that you were thinking about putting out an ebook. What have you got? So we talked over the frameworks, and he said, you know what? I'm going to write the foreword for you. And I said, well, wow. And he said, and why don't you make it an actual book?
Yeah.
So I think it took me about a month to take 9 years of thinking, write it up, get the frameworks nicely designed. And then, I self-published it on Amazon. So, shamelessly, I've self-published it. I'm not in the pantheon of published authors like yourself. But I got the thing out there, and I'm very, very proud of it. So it's 7 shapes, each of which is a way of describing engagement and the different facets of engagement, mm-hmm. in a way that can be used tactically and also strategically. And they're shapes because shapes are memorable. And when you're in that moment of writing a tweet,
yeah.
it helps to be able to quickly recall a framework that helps you write that tweet better.
Okay.
All the way up to the way that you are strategically planning engagement and what the engagement journey is for your customers, let's say,
yeah.
over a 5-year period, but still a framework is vital for that. So that's what the book is. It's a collection of frameworks as shapes because we remember shapes.
Brilliant.
And so that, in that way, I guess the book is kind of engaging itself.
Fantastic. But so before we get into the shapes and the kind of the frameworks and stuff, I mean, let's step back a little bit and let me ask you for your view on what engagement is and what it isn't. Because you talk about engagement, and you talk about relationships, and engagement is this big word that gets thrown around.
Yeah.
It either stands alone, or it has customer tacked on the front of it, or employee tacked on the front of it, or
yeah, that's right.
All sorts of other kind of things. So it'd be really interesting and useful to get your view on what it is and what it isn't.
Sure. And this, of course, is the ongoing debate, is what is engagement? Mm-hmm. And if you were to ask your average marketer what engagement is, they would probably say something around social media.
Right.
And they would talk about how many people commented or liked or clicked or watched a particular piece of content or a video. Because after all, if you go to the Facebook analytics dashboard for a Facebook page, that's what you're going to see, is they talk about reach and they talk about engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So for many, engagement is quite simply when someone interacts with something. And that's fair enough to use that word. But as far as what most people understand engagement to be outside of, this idea of it being interaction, most people would actually begin to think of engagement really as this sense of commitment between a person and a brand or a company or an idea, a sense of emotional bonding, a sense of loyalty, and ultimately relationship. And so the academic literature of which there actually is a fair amount that's trying to conceptually wrestle with this,
mm-hmm.
really seems to emphasize that engagement is about an enduring relational bond between customer and brand, or between employee and employer, or between member and community.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about. So when we talk about engagement, it's best for us to steer away from Facebook likes and things. Those are what I like to call interactions,
mm-hmm.
which are the building blocks of engagement, but they're not engagement itself. Engagement specifically is beyond marketing. It's beyond HR. It's beyond those things. It's about an emotional, intimate bond between two people, or between a person and another entity, be it company, brand, product, idea, etc.
And so, do you think is that what many organizations are getting wrong? Is that they're focusing on the interactions rather than actually the broader relationship?
Certainly. When it comes to getting people engaged, immediately people think about the immediate interactions and tactics without thinking about the longer strategic implications. And then they get frustrated when those don't seem to create the effects that they want. So let's take a classic example, working at a startup.
Mm-hmm.
Every startup wants to have a massively engaged team, mm-hmm. working behind it. Because when people are engaged, they put in a lot of discretionary effort. They're aligned with the startup's goals. They really get behind it. It's not just the founder that believes in it. He wants, or she wants, every team member to be really behind it. So employee engagement is really important in a startup. And what many startups will do is they'll go, right, we want people to be engaged. Here's what we do. We'll buy a foosball table.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we'll do. We'll stock up the fridge with beer.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we'll do. We'll have bean bags.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is they're looking at some tactical, you know, idea here, and they're looking at some interactive things, and then they get frustrated why that isn't creating a far more engaged team.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, what you really want from your work is a sense of fulfillment,
mm-hmm.
A sense of mastery, a sense of autonomy, a sense of what you're doing has purpose behind it. And so very often when people think about engagement, they end up looking to the bells and the whistles rather than looking at the relational, emotional bonds that are really being created.
Right.
Yeah. And so, yes, bean bags and football tables are a part of engagement, the same way that likes and clicks are a part of engagement, but they are only interactions towards the bigger goal of an emotional bond,
mm-hmm.
between person and the other entity.
So is there another challenge with that, in that it's hard to attach KPIs or metrics to them? Because I was just thinking about, I remember a long, long time ago, another friend of mine, Jeremy Waite, who now works at IBM, he put a fantastic little an article or a post on social media, I think it was on Twitter actually, which asked the question, is like, how do you measure the ROI of your dog?
And
you think about it, it's a bit like your dog goes, what does a dog do? The dog do that you basically, you have to spend a lot of time walking it, taking it outside to go to the bathroom, feeding it, getting it insured, vet's bills, all those different sort of things. And actually, what do you actually get back from it? There's a lot of effort that goes into it. So it's almost like, it was just this ridiculous example, the ROI of my dog. You know, from a pure commercial perspective, you go, I probably wouldn't stack up.
Yes. Yeah, it's like saying, what's the ROI of having phones in your business?
Mm-hmm.
What's the ROI of using the internet? Well, it's fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
The ROI is that we can't do it without it. With customer engagement, so if we talk specifically about customer engagement, because that'll be the context that most people are coming at who are listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
Customer engagement, first of all, let's be very clear. The research and the evidence shows that investing in engaging your customers so that you have a highly engaged customer base is profitable for you, and it increases the value of your customers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different reports out there. One report says that an engaged customer will spend 300% more per year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a massive increase in the number of transactions and in the spend per transaction.
Mm-hmm.
Gallup, who released kind of one of the seminal pieces of research on customer engagement, which kind of coincided with their book Human Sigma, which is now 10 years old, said that there is a 23% premium that a fully engaged customer offers over a standard engaged customer, and a disengaged customer, so someone who doesn't have that emotional bond,
mm-hmm.
it's just basically buying you because you're cheaper than someone else, represents a 13% decrease in value against your average, kind of averagely engaged customer.
Right.
And there are then stats, tons and tons of other stats. And if anyone wants them, I've got an area on my website where I'm listing, I think I've got a list of something like 50 customer engagement stats.
Mm-hmm.
But the critical thing is, if you invest in customer engagement, it will result in increased spending, increased frequency of spending, and it will also result in advocacy, loyalty, retention. Because what we're talking about here is when a customer has an emotional relationship with a brand,
mm-hmm.
they are no longer making their purchasing decisions rationally, they're making them emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Rationally is the place of which is the cheapest,
yes.
which is the most convenient, which has the benefits that suit me. Emotional is it's those things become secondary, and it's more concerned with what is the meaning, what is the identity, what is the fulfillment, what does this say about me? This is why somebody shops in the UK, we have the supermarket Waitrose.
Yeah.
This is why somebody shops at Waitrose when it would be cheaper to shop at a discount supermarket like Aldi, because it says something about me when I go there. And again, this is nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have that emotional bond, it protects you against fighting a commoditized battle of which is the cheapest.
Right.
Because engaged customers are happy to spend more because they want you, because they've got the emotional bond with you. The same way that when we have an emotional bond with a friend, we go out of the way to be there for them when it would be more expedient for us to go out with someone else, let's say, or, sure. Or do something else. Because we're not thinking about it rationally in terms of what's the cost-benefit ratio of this friendship. We're thinking about this friendship edifies me emotionally, therefore it's important to me.
Yeah.
And it's the same dynamic that happens. And indeed, what I've always been saying is we build relationships with brands and products and ideas and organizations the same way that we build relationships with people. And so actually engagement isn't that difficult because you think, what would I do if this was a person? And then you do that.
Mm.
And what's really weird is just how we seem to act completely differently when it comes to our marketing. And we treat people not as people. We treat them as customers, as if somehow customer means that they've lost their nature of being a person.
Yeah, no, one of the fascinating things, I always call it the Jekyll and Hyde syndrome.
Yeah,
is that, yeah. You know, as soon as people cross the office threshold, as it were,
yeah,
they turn into this non-customer.
Yeah,
And so it's almost it's quite acceptable to do certain things to people or let things slide, whatever, where they would never accept that themselves in their own lives. So that, yeah, it doesn't make sense. So that's fascinating. So. On the book sort of things, I mean, let's get into the books because, as you say, it's organized around a bunch of shapes. I think, yes. I believe there's seven of them. Is that right?
There are seven shapes, yeah.
Can you give me, because what we don't want to do is we don't want to kind of tell everybody everything in the book. We want to kind of give them a bit of a kind of like, oh, look, here's a quick insight. So can you give us a quick overview of all of the shapes and how that all sort of fits together? As it were.
Yeah, so the shapes look at the field of engagement. So let's take shape number four. Shape mm-hmm. number four is literally a number four.
Yeah.
And it uses the number four as a way of plotting. So if you imagine the number four, but you take away the kind of the kind of diagonal line at the top left.
Yeah.
What you've got there is just a plus symbol, or essentially a 2x2 matrix. Uh-huh. If you're a management consultant, so it's a 2x2 matrix with a little bit extra, and it just clearly demonstrates what I call the four and a half frontiers of engagement.
Right.
Because if we say that engagement is about people and people, then engagement is the same whether it's with a customer or an employee or a community member or a colleague or even ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the case. The process of engagement is the same all the time. The language might change. Some of the tactical things might change, but the process is precisely the same.
Right.
So for instance, shape number four is very clearly number four as a way of explaining what the four and a half frontiers of engagement are.
Right.
So that would be number four. Whereas shapes, shape one and shape three, are looking at the kind of the unifying process of engagement. And then shape number three describes the three levels of engagement. So there are three kind of three levels of engagement that people can operate at and that an organization can operate at. For maximum engagement, you want to operate at all three. Most companies tend to operate at level one, sometimes reaching into level two. And so that's what shape number three,
specifies. Is that the following the scatter gather matter to sort of continuum?
Yeah. So now you're showing your keen knowledge of my work, which I'm very grateful for. But shape number one demonstrates what are the three processes of engagement. So engagement is a process.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a state. It's a process. In actual fact, engagement seeks to build a state of connection, really.
Mm-hmm.
So engagement is a process. The way that we can prove this is if you think about a friend that you haven't spoken to in 10 years, but then when you're with them, you immediately connect.
Mm-hmm.
You have a state of connection with them, even though you haven't been through the process of engaging with them recently.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't say I'm engaged, but you would say I'm connected. Mm-hmm. And so connection, therefore, is stronger than engagement. So in the first shape, which is a circle, I outline what are the three kind of processes of engagement that are circular or cyclical, and that is scatter, gather, matter, which mm-hmm. is this great farming metaphor, right, of mm-hmm. – you scatter your seed because with engagement, you have to put out the message. You gather those who respond to you and you never know who will respond or who won't. You can't predict it. And then with the seed that you gather and you reap in, you turn it into bread, and bread is something that matters, right? It's a meal. It feeds you. It sustains you.
Right.
So kind of, we kind of got these three levels of engagement. So yes, that's the overall idea. And then, the shape number six, is an X, and it has within it what are the six psychological levels of engagement.
Okay, cool.
Shape number five is an asterisk, and an asterisk has 5 points to it. And
right.
Those are the five different, what I call the different spurs of engagement, the different things that very tactically elicit engagement. So each shape is in a number of ways trying to kind of, you know, play around and be a little bit cheeky and also trying to be memorable so that when you're sat there and, like I say, you're writing a tweet or you're designing a graphic, you can go, ah, right, I remember what the principles are here because there's, you know, well, this shape is actually on my keyboard, right?
Yes.
I'm tapping it right there and then. And what I'm hoping is that every time someone types, you know, the letter E, they'll think of the 3E model or something like that, right?
Right. And so,
basically, I'm trying to commit inception on a mass scale.
Yeah, you are kind of, you're trying to kind of sear yourself into our brains.
Yes,
with these,
I am.
With these shapes. So, but are these kind of principles equally applicable to both customers and employees? I mean, because you're saying it's relationships, so I assume it is. It's like a customer, they're tools for customer engagement as well as employee engagement.
Yeah, the process is exactly the same.
Yeah.
So I wrote this book as a practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working in this field for about 20 years. I mean, I've only been calling it engagement for the last two or three, but for 20 years I've been working in this, and I've done it with customers, I've done it with communities, I've done it with my own teams, which have been quite sizable at times. The processes are all the same. And then I've spent the last 9 years just thinking obsessively about this to the point where, you know, where I dream in frameworks, right? I mean, yeah, that's how far gone my mind is.
So
and now I'm looking at the literature academically, and it's verifying it and backing it up again. So it's pretty borne out.
Excellent. So, I mean, so you've got these seven shapes, and depending on a company's kind of challenge, as it were, I mean, how would an organization or professional know when to apply or choose a shape for their particular kind of like challenge?
Yeah, so
do you start at one and go to seven, or is it like it's a toolbox? How does it work?
Yeah, it's a toolkit. And so shape number five, which I mentioned, is this kind of very tactical framework.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that most people would be using on a daily basis to help them think about how they write something. So it's shape number five is the five spurs of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So spurs, S-P-U-R-S. And each of those is a letter, you know, creating an acronym. And you know, so the S stands for shared.
Mm-hmm.
So people engage with things that demonstrate sharedness and demonstrate commonality. So if you're writing a tweet, you might go, okay, how does this tweet communicate what us and our customers have in common?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or if you're writing a memo to your team, you might think, how do I take a moment here to communicate what we all have in common? Whereas the R stands for response.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a mechanism that people can respond to this so that they can engage with it more and there can be more interaction?
Right.
So then you might go, right, does this tweet have a call to action?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want someone to do with this tweet? At the end of this memo, is there a way that if people are interested, they can say, yes, I'd like to know more? Or do I not specify that? Do I make it just a little bit too vague? So that would be the tactical shape. Whereas if you were planning strategically what the engagement journey is of your customers or your clients or your employees, then you would go to shape number six, which is the main model, really, and that demonstrates what are the six levels of engagement that people go through.
Okay. And so, Scott, to bring this sort of to life, as it were, I mean, do you have a couple of examples of companies that are sort of, you know, going or using this type of approach, or that you can help to, if like, bring some of these shapes to life?
Yeah, there are so many, but I'm going to give the classic cliche worn out example of Apple.
Right. Okay.
You know, which is basically the example given in every marketing slide deck in the world, and with good reason, right?
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about scatter gather matter, right? And let's kind of go back to some of the basics.
Okay.
So the idea of scatter, gather, matter is that when you engage with people, it's like throwing seeds into a field.
Yeah.
And you never know who's actually going to respond.
Mm-hmm.
All of us have had those times where we thought that a business deal was definitely going to come from one place.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came from a completely other unexpected source.
Yeah.
Right? All of us know what that's like. You were so certain it was going to be one, then it ends up being the other.
Mm-hmm.
So the first principle of engagement is you've got to scatter your message. You've got to express your message.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple are very good at expressing their message. They're very good at expressing what their engagement is about you know, even if we think back to 1984 and that iconic, you know, ad that launched the Macintosh, they've always had this artistic way of expressing something in a very powerful, memorable way. Mm-hmm. And this really is the skill of marketing and communications. Even if you're working in, you know, you're an employer, the way that you communicate your mission, the way that you communicate what you're doing is really, really important. Mm-hmm. But that's not enough, right? That's not enough. So what happens to seed? Well, seed over time, if the water and the sun comes, it bears a harvest. And now you need to reap that harvest. You need to gather that harvest in. People have responded to your message. You've got to gather it. And so this is now, you know, the idea of getting the sickle and gathering this stuff up. And when you do that, this is now a very physical, visceral, emotional moment.
Yes.
This is what I then define in the 3E model as engagement, as experience. And this, of course, is where you would be right in line, you know, and right there is, you know, the power of customer experience, yeah, right, or employee experience. And this is where people respond to your message and they have a very face-to-face interaction with you. Mm. So if we take Apple now, this is their retail store, right?
Right.
I mean, people laughed at Steve Jobs in 2001 where he said, we're going to have these retail locations. And yet now everyone's copying him. Walk into a Microsoft store or walk into a Samsung store, and it is a poor clone of what the Apple store originally innovated. It's this very powerful experience that is one of the main points of brand activation. Not only is it a physical experience in the store, but also their products. Again, unboxing them is a very emotional experience. It's very powerful. And so you've got that experiential element.
You know, can I interject there? Because let me kind of check this out. Thinking on this, because I always kind of thought, I think I may have actually talked to you about this before, but let me see if I have or not. But the thing that I always kind of thought about the Apple stores, and I think this is almost the really clever bit, is the in many ways created a community center on the high street. So this idea that is the doors were always open and their products or devices were always there just to use. Everything's connected up to the internet. Go help yourself, do the kind of things. We're not gonna push you into buying anything. You can come and hang out. We'll run other sort of events. And they're actually starting to build on that idea and talking about changing their model and adding more to it, so putting on more shows and events and other bits and pieces, so building on that community thing. So even though you might only ever have an old iPhone sort of thing, but you might aspire to having an iPad or a MacBook Pro or, you know, another big powerful Mac or whatever it might be, or an Apple Watch, for example, that actually there's different levels to the community, and it becomes, you don't necessarily have to have all the stuff to be part of it. And sometimes you can go and just hang out because you're with like-minded sort of people.
Well, so what you're touching on here are two very important elements. The first is that middle level of engagement, which, you know, we talk about, you know, scatter and then gather, is when a company gathers its customers to itself, it should also gather the customers to each other, because that strengthens the sense of social identity that, you know, creates an engaged customer. Is I'm one of this tribe of people, right? So it's very powerful to go into an Apple store and see other Apple customers and go, I'm part of this tribe.
Sure.
All right. So that is a very, very powerful thing. So definitely the sense of community is an integral part of experience. But then we've got this third level of engagement. So we've got engagement as expression, mm-hmm. which is what you scatter. You've got engagement as experience, which is when you gather people. And then finally, we've got engagement as enablement. And this is the matter level.
Right.
Is the highest level of engagement is when the brand becomes a part of your daily life and you take it with you, because it enables you through the platform that it provides for you. Mm-hmm. In the case of Apple, this is best noted in the case of the App Store, right? Mm-hmm. The App Store is this wonderful platform that enables developers to get their apps to people without them having to individually sign them and market them. It enables the customers to find the apps that they want, and then they use them on their phones and are enabled to do new things that they could not do before.
Right.
Yeah. And now this is being reflected in their store. Their store is a place of enablement. So it's not just an experience. You don't just go in there and you experience the tech. you are also enabled by it because of the training that they provide, the Genius Bar, the events, the town center. They're actually now trying to be an enabler of community with this whole town center idea. So what they're saying is, not only are we going to enable you technologically, we're going to enable you socially.
Yeah.
Now, the best example, if actually one really wants to look at the best example of engagement, whether it's employee or customer or community, is actually religion. I mentioned I was a church minister.
Sure.
And we can see these three levels expressed wonderfully in the case of church. So a church scatters its message through a very, very compelling narrative, right, of the death and the burial and the resurrection of this guy, Jesus Christ, and the kind of powerful symbols that go into that. Then we have the experience that on a Sunday, the service will be, very symbolic, and it will be very emotional and sensorial. And you are gathered with all the other people week by week, strengthening that social identity. And then finally, the religion acts as an enabler because it provides you with a platform in the mind, a range of mental models that make life easier for you because they inform the way that you're going to live. Now, whether or not you agree with religion and you agree with the tenets, those who are religious enjoy the fact that they are enabled and empowered through these ideas that they take with them.
Yeah.
Judge not lest you be judged, right? This simple little scripture that actually is this really handy way of, when you want to be judgmental, you go, hang on a second, I'm going to judge not, I'm going to judge not, or do unto your neighbor as you'd have them do unto you. Okay, in this situation, I'm actually going to try and be loving here rather than being, nasty or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that is a powerful enabler because you take it with you, right? People who are Christian or Muslim or Buddhist in a moderate way, or particularly in a devout way, they take it with them. The same way that we take our brands that we love with us. So our mobile phones are never more than a meter away from us. They are the most device product ever manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that the brands in terms of clothing and apparel that we really love, we take with us. I'm wearing a Ralph Lauren polo shirt right now, and I've got that little polo player proudly on there. I take it with me.
Mm-hmm.
I think about the people that you'll see who wear only Air Jordan clothing, right?
Right.
They ostensibly take that with them, and it enables them. It enables their identity. Or the people that have particular stationery, that stationery is an enabler of them. The person who likes their Mont Blanc pens because it enables their identity. So we've very clearly got these three levels. And what most companies will do is they'll try to fulfill the engagement as expression level. Pick up any item of food from your local convenience store and read it, and you've got engagement as expression.
Yeah.
This deliciously baked good, it's a pie, and yet on the back you're giving me this rich story. We're seeing it a lot with crisps, right? Crisps in the UK, or chips as they call them in the States. On the back, they'll have this rich story of the artistry that's gone into making these chips. They're engaging you through their expression.
Yeah.
Then, we will then go to engagement as experience. And this is where some companies are getting it right. They are making a rich experience. And of course, that's your work. That's everything that you talk about, right? Mm-hmm. And then finally, some people, they transcend to this peak level where they really understand that engagement is actually most of all through enablement. And they find profound ways to enable their customers. Let's take, for instance, Nike, who through the creation of Nike Plus mm-hmm. have found a very powerful way to enable their customers beyond the experience of going into a store or wearing their clothes. They are now actually enabling your healthy lifestyle, right, in a very personalized, customized way.
Right. And so, there's a potential that this gets kind of really complicated really quickly. And so Scott, if there are some people that are experienced, engagement kind of professionals, or people that are thinking about some of these kind of problems, they're executives, they're entrepreneurs, they're leaders, they're professionals, and they're thinking about this, and they're reading the highlights, and they're going, yeah, the engagement thing is a thing that we struggle with. I guess where should they start? Where would you recommend they go? Like, this is probably one of the first or couple of things that you should think about doing, because if you do this and you do this right, then you're going to set yourself up for, you know, a more productive and more meaningful sort of journey, I guess.
Yeah, so that's a fantastic question, because you say this can become complex quickly, and indeed any business concept can very quickly become complex and abstract, and we don't even know where to begin. What's the first step that we take? And the first step that we take when we engage is, you know, we talk about scatter, gather, matter. Mm-hmm. The first thing is to actually go right to the end and go, matter. What do I do that matters to my customers? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking now very keenly of Simon Sinek's talk, start with why, and the idea of start with why. Don't start with what, don't start with how, start with why. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he says rather famously now, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. So ask yourself, why do we do what we do? And why does it matter to our customers? And that's going to be the peak of your engagement, is how then do you invite people to bond emotionally with that? And then what you do is you will scatter an invitation for people to engage emotionally with it. You will then gather those people that are interested and create experiences for them. And then you will begin to matter more powerfully to them. McKinsey have a piece that is easy to find if you search for it. It's called Five No Regret Moves for Superior Customer Engagement.
Right.
And one of them is, and it's just obvious, is have a customer summit.
Yeah.
Get a bunch of your customers, take them on an offsite with you, and you will very quickly find out what is it that people are really bonding with emotionally with you. And then you can just begin to scale it. And guess what? You've engaged a group of customers while you've been doing it.
Yeah. You know, it's not rocket science.
No, well, and particularly because what I'm contesting, what I'm kind of preaching the gospel of, I suppose, is that we engage with brands and products and ideas and organizations the same way that we do with people.
Yeah.
So ask yourself, how is it that someone would go on a first date with our brand? Mm. How is it that someone would want to move in with our brand? How is it that someone would want to have kids with our brand? Mm-hmm. What does that journey look like? And indeed, actually, the chapter six, the X model, is I provide those relational cues. Mm-hmm. What would it be like for someone to have a first date with you? What would it be like for someone to begin dating with you on a more regular basis? What would it take for someone to say, I'm your boyfriend or your girlfriend?
Right? Sure.
And such and so forth. And that is actually what we're talking about here.
Fantastic. Scott, that's fascinating. And I would recommend, people can get hold of the book. But I mean, before I ask you my final question, is there anything that you'd like to add that we've missed out?
I think I would just say again that customer engagement really is the competitive advantage that makes brands stick. Mm-hmm. Every global brand that we can name is there because it has a high degree of customer engagement. And if you want to get off the wagon of competing on price or features or convenience, you need to look at customer engagement. Otherwise, you are subject to who does what you do a bit better. But when you switch to customer engagement, you've now got the potential to be a company that never goes out of business because you are building a relationship. And relationships don't go out of business.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a very, very good point, in fact. So, Scott, that brings me to my final question that I always like to ask at the end of these interviews. And the question is this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly pluck?
Watch the film V for Vendetta.
Okay, that's random. Can you explain?
It's random, and I'm not promoting myself as well. Watch the film V for Vendetta, and you will have a wonderful example of kind of like powerful storytelling.
Yes,
I've been watching that film a lot recently, and I think if you haven't seen it, watch it, and you will really get stirred about the power of engagement as expression, mm-hmm. and also engagement as experience. There's this scene where one of the characters has a transformation. And that is a great example of engagement as experience. And then what you see is the way that that experience is then an enabler for the way that they live thereafter. And that is a great example of engagement as enablement, that highest level. And the whole thing is it's really about engaging with an idea.
Perfect.
And of course, that the people who shaped history, that's what they've done. So I think about Martin Luther King saying, I have a dream. Mm-hmm. That is engagement as enablement, because it planted into people this concept that just eternally engages us and inspires us to kind of go higher. So, yes, I will shamelessly plug that you should watch V for Vendetta.
Well, fantastic. Thank you very much. That's a bit random, but I mean, that gives me an excuse to go back and watch the film again through a different lens. But what I will do is I will shamelessly plug yourself and say that people should check out the Shape of Engagement book. And I will make sure I get all that kind of linked up and, you know, help people kind of like find out. If people want to find out kind of more about yourself, then check out Scott's website, which is scottgould.me. But Scott, thank you. Just want to say thank you for your time, your interest, the work that you're doing. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
And Adrian, likewise, thank you. And, you know, thank you for just being, you know, the legend that you are.
Oh, very kind. Thank you.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new. And I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswinsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.